Coming Up Next Time podcast is brought to you in part by Built to Ride. Head over to builttoride.ca and pick up some coffee or apparel. Use the exclusive listener code COMEUP when you check out for an additional 20% off your order. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. First off, I'd like to apologize for the gaps between episodes. Life's just getting in the way, and I appreciate all of you hanging around and waiting for this one. So this interview is with Tanner Hattori. I might have said his last name wrong, and I do apologize for that. This is sort of a lost episode. I thought my interviews with him and with Kane had been gone forever, but I found Tanner's episode on an SD card right before I formatted it. So things are good. Anyhow, Tanner is one of Team Canada's ISDE club members, the only club member, a privateer, who went over to Italy, and this interview took place just beforehand. He's a wonderful guy, and I hope you enjoy the episode.
Okay. All right, here we go. So we'll start here. Hey, Tanner, I just want to say thank you for coming on the podcast. If you want to do me a favor for the benefit of the listeners, could you introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Tanner Hattori. I'm 24 years old. I'm from Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada.
Sweet. And you're one of the trophy team members for Team Canada for the International 6 Days this year?
I'm actually the only club rider this year.
Oh, nice.
For the IC, yeah. So,
oh, I didn't
be excited, lone wolf.
Yeah. So that's interesting as a solo club rider in a team sport. How are you expecting to? I don't know how to put that. As the only club team representative on Team Canada, do you feel a different kind of pressure as you're a solo act instead of being a member of a team? I mean, you are a member of a team, but you're going to be riding alone.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I'm the only, like, I can only rely on myself, really, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, but with this event, I mean, you are riding as a team and you want to do good for the team and for Canada. But at the same time, right, I think a lot of the racers involved in the event think about their personal results as being just as important, right? So for me, this is my first ISDE. I'm happy if I finish all 6 days. You know, it's a good building block for me. So whatever happens, happens. You know, I'm going to do the best that I can. But there's definitely a little bit of pressure because I feel like, you know, I'm with the team. You know, we have to, you know, we got to drive. They got to wait for me. We got to figure all this stuff out logistically with me. So I feel like there's a little bit of pressure to succeed and not just be a bag of potatoes out there on my bike. But yeah, like I said, it's my first time, so I'm just going to do the best that I can, and that's all I really can do, right? So.
Oh, man, I think everybody's going to give it their 100%, right? And that might translate into different results for everyone, but there's no denying that everyone's committed 100%, so you're at the same level that everybody else is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody's going to put in their 100% effort, so the only real difference is some people have some experience with the event, unlike me. So I just kind of, you know, play with the cards I'm dealt, really, right? So I'm still learning and I'll figure out the event as I go. So I'm hoping, you know, if I can start off and steadily improve throughout the 6 days, that's a big enough victory for me. So
yeah, that makes sense. And are you familiar with any of the other riders, like Phil, Jared, or Tyler? Cade?
I've never really met any of them in person. Other than I met Tyler and Phil at some GNCCs a few years ago. I went down to Florida in 2015. I've ridden a few GNCCs, but I met both of them then. They both blew my doors off then, so good introduction at least.
Yeah, it gives you an idea of what you're facing, I guess, eh?
For sure. So. Yeah, other than that, though, I've talked to Jared a little bit here, a little more than some of the other guys, just been kind of talking back and forth on social media and talking with Phil mostly about his face after his injury this past weekend. So just trying to be social with everybody, kind of get that buddy feel. So not as awkward once you get over there and you're just trying to, you know, hang out and everybody's going to be stressed out and jet lagged and everything. Trying to make it as easy as possible. So
have you ever been to Europe or to Italy specifically?
I've never been across the pond and I've never been to Italy. I'm super excited to go. I've really always wanted to go, and to be able to go across for racing my motorcycle is super cool. Never thought I'd get to this stage. So
yeah, no doubt. Well, what do you mean you never thought you'd get to this stage?
Well, you never think, like, I've always wanted to go to the ISD. You know, that's been a huge goal of mine ever since, you know, I was younger and I saw some of the people that I looked up to, you know, qualify. And it's just been something that you never think it's going to be you, right? So
yeah, I could see that. It's hard to imagine doing any of that stuff. Like, just having the money or the means to get there, is beyond most people's reach, I think. And you're a privateer, right? Like you don't have any factory support or anything like that. So you're raising your funds just through, hard work and donations from friends and family, or?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I'm as average Joe as it gets, right? Like, this year I got some support from Yamaha. So that's been super cool. They've been helping me out. They got my bike set up for me. But yeah, other than that, you know, I work a 9-to-5. I race on the weekends. I've had some really good luck this year so far with raising money, and I'm super happy and grateful with everybody that's on board, especially, you know, with COVID and everything happening. I know a lot of businesses are suffering, so it's been super cool to see all the local support.
Oh, that's great. And like, how do you go about sort of engaging the local companies and asking them for the help? Like, do you have someone to assist you, or are you sort of making it up as you go?
Yeah, I'm pretty much kind of doing it on my own. I got some resumes printed out, and I've just literally, you know, places, you know, like a lot of people tell me, you know, you print a resume off for a sponsorship or whatever, just send them out. You know, you need the support, send it wherever you want to go, send 100 of them out. But yeah, I need the support for sure. And that's one way to go about it. But I started off I printed off of, you know, a dozen resumes, and I thought, okay, where do I go as a customer? Where do I frequent? And those are the places that I went to first. And almost every place that I went to was super supportive right off the hop, because, you know, I'm going there all the time. They know who I am, right? You know, they realize that I've spent money there and I'm not just asking for a handout essentially, right? So I've had really good support with just companies that, you know, I've supported in the past and stuff like that. So it's been really good. You know, I had a little bit of local news, some publishing and posting about it. So had some people get on board from that, and just the local motocross scene has been super helpful. You know, there are a couple of business owners within the scene that I, you know, maybe didn't know that they owned a business, and they're helping me out. So it's been really good.
Oh, that's amazing. When a community pulls together to do something like this, like.
Yeah, I'm super grateful for everybody that's come to support me. It's been really good. I never thought I'd see the support I'm getting. So I'm super grateful for everybody that's helping me out.
So you'd mentioned how it was a dream of yours when you were a young guy. What made you think like 2020 or 2021 is the year to do it? Like, when did you decide to go?
I had thought about it for the last few years. I've had some injuries over the last like 5 years that have been somewhat detrimental to my progression as a rider. The biggest one in the beginning of 2019, I had interest in going to the ISD, and I crashed and I shattered my collarbone, and I got a really bad concussion from that. So some stuff like that has hindered my progression, you could say. I've had a few injuries the last few seasons at the beginning of the season. And then, you know, it's tough to recover from some of this stuff, especially when, you know, it's not like I'm on a team and I get to see, you know, the top sportsmen docs and I get to go do all this physio and all this recovery, right? Like my main concern after, you know, I get hurt riding is not, okay, when can I get racing again? It's I got to get back to work, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I've had some stuff like that. And, you know, when you get hurt at the beginning of the year and, you know, you can get back on the bike in July, August, or whenever, right? you know, I spend the rest of the season before, you know, winter hits, just kind of getting my feet back under me, just getting back used to the bike ride. So, yeah. So just originally, like I had thought about before I turned 24, riding for the junior team. But unfortunately, when you go and smack your melon, it kind of puts a hold on things. So.
So what are you expecting? What kind of riders are you expecting to go up against in the club class?
I expect the Italian club teams to be extremely fast this year. There are a lot of fast riders, especially like locally, right?
Yeah.
You know, when it's within your own country, that's a huge advantage, right? You can ride that terrain. You're familiar with it, right? I wish I could have this event, you know, in my backyard, but, you know, so... I know a lot of the U.S. guys. I race a lot. I'm like Thunder Bay is only like 30 minutes from the Minnesota border. So I spent the majority of my career racing in the States. So I know a lot of the guys that are racing for like the U.S. club teams and some of the trophy teams. So it's cool. Like, so I like my local series is, we'll say like the District 23 AMA. So Minnesota, Wisconsin. Scrambles and enduros. So there are two other riders that I grew up racing with, so Nick Swenson and Nate Ferger, that are racing for the U.S. club team. So I'd like to, you know, see if I can keep them honest a little bit for a few of those days. They're a little bit faster than me, I think, but it's just cool to be able to race against those guys, you know, growing up, and now we get to all race overseas. So I think the U.S. and the Italians are going to be probably the teams to beat club-wise. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when I was talking with Cade, he was talking about the American team and basically made some kind of commitment that Team Canada is not going to let America walk away with it. So hopefully from America listens to the episodes before they get out there, I guess.
Yeah. I'll have to keep it quiet until then, eh?
Yeah, well, no, I'm gonna publish it. It's all good. little shit talking cross borders. Yeah. Always been a part of our sports history.
Oh, you gotta.
Yeah. So for training for riding in Italy, what kind of research have you done? Like, do you know what you can expect to be riding?
I've watched some videos from over there, the terrain in like northern Italy and surrounding area, and just where I'm from in Thunder Bay, we're really isolated. So like you're basically riding in the Thunder Bay area, like in Canada, there's not another major city, like pretty much 8 hours either direction, right? Yeah. So with that being said, we're lucky to be as isolated as we are because there are a ton of places to ride around here. So any terrain, like if I'm, you know, I want to ride somewhere sandy, I can go find somewhere sandy. If I want to ride somewhere rocky with crazy elevation, I can find that, you know. So I've watched some videos of like what the terrain is like and just tailored my training around areas that look similar at least, right? So spent some time dialing in the suspension and stuff like that on terrain that looks as similar as I can, you know, make out from videos and pictures and whatever, right?
Have you talked to the other team members and gotten anything out of them?
Yeah, I talked to Jared a little bit about some setup stuff. Nothing too crazy. We're all, they're all on like Austria bikes and I'm on a Yamaha this year. So stuff with bike setup, I mean, you get a little bit of similarities, but with the different chassis, you know, there's always like subtle differences, right? So,
yeah, I feel like Yamahas are really popular in the East, and then the European bikes are really popular in the West.
Yeah, I've kind of flipped around through brands throughout the years. I've ridden pretty much every color of the rainbow, but I always find myself a little more at home. The Yamaha rider triangle really works for me, which is weird because I'm a taller guy, and a lot of taller riders seem to not gel with it, but there's just something about the overall chassis feel, and the suspension is unbeatable. Like it's so good. It's so compliant and plush, and you can tune it however you need. And that to me is the biggest plus. I don't really care so much if it's the fastest bike, you know, as the best whatever. As long as you feel fully comfortable, then you can ride to your 100%, right?
So. Yeah. Suspension's a big deal. And I know that they have a great suspension. So, and if you're able to get out of it what you want, then whatever. It sounds like the right tool. Like, I think a lot of people are just brand loyal for no reason at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure, right? And I know a lot of people get support from different companies, and that's good too, right? Like, you gotta make it work for you.
Yeah.
However you can, right?
So. Yeah, but as a guy who's like a privateer, a full-on privateer, paying your own way, it's you got to get the tool that does the job that you need it to do.
Absolutely.
Do you understand the race format, how everything's going to happen over there?
Yeah, I mean, the race format, I've done a little bit of research on. It's similar and different to, you know, other enduro events and the like that I've raced in the past. So I'll be doing in the next little bit here some a little heavier research now that, you know, I kind of got my bike set up and I've got all the other like logistics plan, like we're working on finishing up our flights and all that stuff and bike shipping. So I'll have a little bit more time to focus directly on the racing and the racing format. So
other races, do you remember when you first got involved with GNCC?
Oh, do I ever. My first GNCC was in 2015 in Florida, and it went about as poorly as it could ever go. just thinking back on it, you know, I was, how old was I then? Like 19,
yeah.
18, 19, when I was going up to those races. And I was not prepared at all. Like, I thought I was this big shot. You know, I'd come away, you know, I was doing really well in Minnesota at the time. So I came down there and I was just all full of piss and vinegar. And I think I made it like 3 miles in those sand whoops in Florida before I was almost throwing up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, those races, the GNCCs in particular, are just a different breed. They're totally unreal from anything else I've ever raced.
Okay.
So props to anybody who can ride those races fast, like somebody like Tyler or Phil that have been really successful down there. My hat's off to those guys. They are hard.
What does it take to do? What does it take as a rider to be competitive in a GNCC environment?
You have to be able to push your body past its comfort level, both like speed wise and fitness wise. It takes so much energy to go fast in the terrain that's given in a GNCC for that long too. Like, you have to race like 3.5 hours. And it's just, you got a 180 heart rate the entire time. And it takes a lot of willpower to be able to sustain that rate of speed and that energy level, like your energy output for that long. What I don't think a lot of people realize, like, you can watch videos and pictures and you can look at like Caleb Russell's helmet cam videos and all that stuff from years gone by or whatever. You don't really see how the terrain develops unless you're there in person. Some of those ruts and those holes and the hills there get so deep, it's a different world.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I've learned, and I talked about it with Cade today, was that the Europeans don't tend to groom the tracks like we do here, you know, so they might have a motocross track and they'll let it get rutted out and then they'll leave it for the next day and everybody can just ride the ruts and they don't care. Whereas here, you know, we sort of do like refresh in the morning. Have you ever experienced like a neglected track?
Yeah, actually, we have a local motocross track and it's a wonderful facility, but the terrain is really hard packed and it's very hard to maintain unless it's really wet. It needs a lot of water to be able to kind of till it and get it deep because it's super hard packed clay. And the last like 2 months or so, we haven't had any rain here, like at all. We've got wildfires going like crazy, but that has made the track just basically nearly unrideable for most. So I've been practicing on that for the last little bit and it's been I already know that it's going to help me overseas.
I believe it will. So what have you learned then, training in an environment like that, like that you didn't know beforehand?
One thing that I know has helped, with is my throttle control, especially, you know, when it's that, it's kind of like this hard packed clay that's got some rocks coming up. It's really uneven and it gets a little bit of, you know, you get a few bikes on there, it gets a little bit of dust right on top. It's like riding on ice basically. So I've definitely improved my throttle control and a little bit of my body positioning to kind of make up for just how rough and slippery it is. So I know for a fact that me putting in the laps on this track, and I've been pushing my heart rate and I've been, you know, working on my focus and just trying to hit all my marks, just thinking about the basics of throttle control, using the clutch, shifting, braking late into corners, and just following through with all of the little skills, I know it's going to help me over there. So,
oh, that's great. If you had all the time in the world and money was no object, what would you do to train for the end of the month? Like for, I guess, the end of next month, sorry.
Ooh, I'd probably fly over there. But, you know, like, I have a pretty good system, I think, at least right now, with what I'm doing currently. But if I were able to ride a little bit more than I'm able to currently, I think that would help out. Like, you know, you can hit the gym and you can cycle and do all that fun stuff, and that's great for your fitness. But I think that you gain the most with seat time.
Yeah.
So I would try to just find anywhere that I can emulate what the terrain looks like to almost a T and ride there as much as I could.
Okay.
8 hours a day if I could.
Yeah. Have you done any long, long rides? Like, because you're going to be doing some. So have you just given her shit to try to find out if you could do it?
Yeah, often my regimen will say, I ride motocross on that track generally Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then on the weekend, I'll have usually like Saturday, I'll do kind of a similar terrain to what I think I'm expected over there, like what I think I'm going to come across. And that's where I kind of just, if I keep fine tuning suspension and some mapping settings and stuff like that on the Saturday. And then usually on the Sundays, I go for a long ride. Like I'll try to get at least 5-6 hours of a faster pace kind of trail ride. Like, you know, I'll have some breaks in there here and there, but I try to get out on the bike just so, you know, I get used to even just being on a bike for that long and having a helmet on for that long. And, you know, it's been super hot here, so just sweating for that long, you know?
Yeah.
So with what I have to work with, I'm trying to just use it to its maximum efficiency, we'll say. So the time that I have, I'm trying to spread it out as best I can.
And Lee was talking about support teams. I guess you guys are going to hire support teams?
Yeah, so generally, from what I understand, I mean, I haven't gone. We usually bring like support staff with us. So being with COVID and everything, we ended up, the team is smaller than usual. So we're not sending all of our equipment over in a shipping container like normal. We're going to air freight our bikes. So that being said, we're not going to air freight all these tools and all that stuff, especially when we won't have the support staff because of COVID. So there's some teams that offer service over there that provide the tools and all that stuff. So I signed up with a team like the Jolly Enduro team to do service.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what to expect from that. Like I kind of went through their website and looked through it, and it looks top notch. So I'm excited to, you know, kind of be in that environment. Right. But yeah, it should be interesting to say the least.
Oh yeah. I was just wondering, cause you're the odd man out on the Yamaha. If the support teams are expecting like a Japanese bike, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so with Jolly was really the only option that I had to sign up for support. Like, the other guys being on Austrian bikes, there's tons of support for any of those, you know, red, white, orange, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And there's support for Beta and Sherco and TM and, you know, obviously being from Italy, right? Like, yeah, they're going to show out. Ryu has, it looks like they got some good service too. So Yamaha, Kawasaki, Suzuki, you're kind of SOL on that front. So I'm lucky that the Jolly team is what is representing anybody who's riding like the factory Fantix. So the Fantix is based off of, like, they share a lot of the parts with the Yamaha. So okay. it works out pretty well for me. So a lot of the components are the same still.
Have you thought about the maintenance aspect? Like, I understand everything's very regimented. You can't change out certain things. And you're very tight for time. I guess the way it was explained to me is basically you guys are racing for the time to eat. Like, if you arrive at your checkpoint too late, you're SOL until the next one. I could see how that could stack up and fatigue a person out of the race.
Oh, absolutely, right. And if you have even a minor bike problem, right, that sets you back that amount of time, you know, have a fun rest of the day, right?
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, you know, I work on bikes quite a lot. I mean, you got it, when you're at this level, right, like me, basically a weekend warrior, if you don't work on your own bikes and maintain your own stuff, the sport doubles in cost.
Yeah.
Right? And just time away, right? If you got to drop your bike off to get the tires changed every weekend, right, good luck riding. You know, for me, it doesn't make sense to operate like that. So ever since I was young, you know, I've been changing my own tires. I've been doing my own engine rebuilds. And, you know, I recently started doing all my own suspension work and stuff like that too. So I think that I'm well versed enough in the aspect of bike maintenance. It's just timing for sure. You know,
time's going to be the thing. Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you know, yeah, you gotta, you know, everybody shows the Rabaconda videos where they're changing tires in 3 minutes and that's all fine and dandy. You know, you can pull your wheel off in the garage and change a tire in 3 minutes and think you're king of the mountain. But you got to remember too, you've been riding all day. It's been, you know, 30 degrees out and you got to pull your wheel off and change a tire, you know? So that's something that I think that you can't really train for. And that's just something that you have. Well, I mean, I guess you could train for something like that, but I think that in the racing aspect, that's where you just need to have the grit and the just get it done attitude, right?
So yeah. You can't miss your check marks. Like, yeah, because I guess it's 15 minutes at the end of the day you guys have before you have to turn in the bikes or something like that.
Yeah, around that. So you just got to make sure that, you know, you're organized. You got to know before you get to your stops what you have to do. What are you, you know, what order are you doing everything in? How much time do you have for everything? Are you checking your time? Are you double checking your bike maintenance? You know, my biggest fear is I change my oil and I don't put the drain plug in all the way or something stupid, right? You know, it would kill me to, you know, reach out for all the support, put this, you know, all this preparation into this event, and I go there day one and I fry my bike because I made a mistake or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Does that factor for you? Like, is that an external stressor that is significant? The stress of representing everybody who's decided to try and support you?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's something that I think about a lot because I really do appreciate all the support that I've gotten and I don't take it lightly, right? So my biggest, that's why my focus, I think, is more on just, you know, I want to finish the 6 days. I want to be as successful as I can in that. And I'm going to push the envelope and I'm going to give it my 100% all, right?
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that I have all my ducks in a row that I can be successful in this event because it's not just me, you know, it's not that I drove to a weekend race, you know, and oh no, I didn't put my master link on right. And, you know, something stupid like that, right?
Yeah.
Oh no, it ruined my weekend. It's a lot bigger scale this time, right? So
yeah,
and I just, like I said, you just want to be as prepared as possible. So
yeah, and it'll come down to the stupidest mistake too that will like do somebody in, which is ridiculous.
Oh,
but that's how,
yeah,
it is,
exactly, right?
Right? Yeah,
you know, you drain your oil, you forget to put oil in it, right? Like, you know, when you're under that much pressure and you've been riding all day, you know, it's easy enough for a mistake like that to happen, but you have to be in the mental state and so prepared and focused that you don't let something like that happen.
Yeah, when I drain my oil, I put a zip tie on the clutch lever, and then I don't cut it off.
Just a little remember. yeah. reminder. Eh?
Yeah,
that way that's a good idea. I'll have to steal that one.
Feel free, man. Like, or if I can't find a zip tie, because that does happen, I have a piece of cardboard that says no oil, and I put it on the Speedo, and then I take it off once I got oil inside. Just because the way, I don't know, as being a dad and things, you get called away from your little tasks, and it's so easy to think you've done something that you haven't, and then there you go. You just turn over the engine and done. So
exactly. That's all it takes too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've just seen it happen. You know, I've been lucky enough that my dad over the years has really grilled me on, you know, as I was growing up, you know, step by step, do everything right. You got to make a list. You got to be prepared. Think about what you're doing. Right. So
yeah,
I haven't had any major failures. Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Yeah. We talked about it too much. To suspension, you said you do your own suspension. It's something that came up in another podcast with Chris Birch. And then I got a number of emails from people talking about how they enjoyed that a lot. Do you have any advice for people on how to do self-suspension?
Yeah, actually, you know, like suspension to me, it was kind of a thing that was really foreign. You know, everybody and their dad can do a top end on, you know, whatever, right? And everybody is all gung-ho about normal maintenance, but you know, you look on any forum, you look on any Facebook post, everybody when it comes to suspension says, oh, just bring it to a tech, like bring it to a suspension person or whatever, right? So I was getting to the point where I have a couple bikes and I've been riding lots, and all of a sudden, you know, you got three sets of forks that are leaking oil and a shock that's blown, and then to bring that to a suspension tech, it was just, for somebody like me, it, you know, I was spending crazy amounts of money on suspension. So I said, you know what, like, I just have to figure this out, right? Like, well, it can't be that hard, right? Like, what is different from me and the suspension guy? You know, it's not like there's suspension university that this guy went to for 6 years to learn all the finite details of putting in fork seals, right? So I watched a couple of videos. I got the proper tools. That's a huge point. I see a lot of people, you know, they try to use like PVC pipe for fork seal drivers and all that stuff. Yeah, maybe in a pinch that works, whatever, right? But having the proper tools gives you the confidence to do the job properly. And that's a huge benefit for sure. But just give it a shot. Like, what do you have to lose, right? Like, you put your forks together and it feels like junk. You go, okay, well, then I'll bring the suspension guy, you know? So I think a lot of people, depending on what they ride, would be surprised at actually how easy it is. You know, like I ride Yamahas, I got a YZ125 and some other, you know, whatever. I can do a set of fork seals on that bike now in, you know, 30 minutes, right? So it's one of the things that I'm kicking myself for not doing myself earlier.
Because it is pretty straightforward. But then but it's hard to say it's easy because a lot of people come from different backgrounds.
Like, for sure, right? Yeah, yeah. And I definitely understand how it can be intimidating because it is such a crucial part of your motorcycle, right? And it's easy enough to make a little mistake. You know, you put, you know, 10 cc's less fork oil than you should have and it feels drastically different, and maybe you didn't notice, and then you don't know why it doesn't feel that way or the way it should, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely can understand the intimidation factor in it. So,
and folks just need to stay out of the forums.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Like, the forums are, you know, you can get a lot of good information out of forums, but you definitely get a lot of bad as well.
Yeah, and that's it. And you don't know until you're on the other end of it. Like,
exactly. You so your arm deep.
Yeah. Someone could write it really well, and it's just not correct. Well, it looks like we'll wrap it up here. So is there anybody you want to thank?
Yeah, for sure. I got a big list of everybody that's kind of helping me out so far. Heartbeat Hot Sauce, Wayne Toyota, Corbic Services, Ventura Mechanical, Pepo Osola, you know, Paul Osola, thank you so much for letting me ride your track, Paul. Really appreciate it. I'm sure there's a few more I'm forgetting, but really thank you everybody that's, you know, giving me a little bit, giving me a lot, volunteered your time to me. I appreciate it all. So,
all right, buddy. Well, good luck in Italy, and I'll talk to you soon. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode.
I want to thank my guests for taking the time to sit down and chat with me. A special thank you to you, my supporters. Without you, this would not be possible. If you enjoyed the show, give it a 5-star rating. And if you haven't already, be sure to like, subscribe, and share. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to take the 3-episode challenge. Once again, thank you for your continued support, and stay tuned to find out what's coming up next time.